Welcome, everyone, and thanks for listening to Let's Brief It, the podcast for law students by law students. My name is Dejana Richardson. I'm a third-year law student at CU Boulder. Unfortunately, my co-host, Baraha Joy Singwame, is unable to join us today. In today's episode, we are going to explore bankruptcy, bifurcated fee agreements, and indigent petitioners. To speak more about this issue is today's guest, Matthew Skeen Jr. He is a creditor's rights attorney. He has been a partner in Skeen & Skeen PC, a boutique bankruptcy firm in Denver, Colorado. Currently, Matt is a managing attorney of the Pro Se Clinic at the United States District Court of Colorado, a program run by the Colorado Bar Association. Matt has provided representation to clients arising in the context of Chapter 7, Chapter 11, and Chapter 13 bankruptcy in his practice. When Matt is not working on all things related to bankruptcy, he enjoys spending time with his family. He is a foodie and enjoys traveling. Thank you for joining us, Matt, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dejana. Happy to be here.
To start, can you please provide our listeners with some knowledge about bankruptcy? What is it and what are the different chapters?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Bankruptcy is essentially a process that the government has created over many decades to provide debt relief for people who cannot pay their creditors back. Back in medieval times, and even more recently, we had things called debtors' prisons, where if you couldn't pay your debts, you went to jail. But we soon found out that that was not really good for either the debtor or the creditor or society, and decided that there ought to be an outlet for people who just are hopelessly in debt. The bankruptcy code is divided into different chapters, and some of them are more focused on business bankruptcies, but primarily for individuals, consumer bankruptcy, which is mostly what I deal with. The primary chapters that you're looking at are Chapter 7 and Chapter 13, and they have different advantages and disadvantages, and based on kind of your particular situation, sometimes a Chapter 7 liquidation, where all non-exempt assets that you have at the time of your bankruptcy are can be sold to pay creditors in exchange for a discharge of your debt. Chapter 13 involves a payment plan over 3 or 5 years, which is typically longer, more expensive, and more complicated. But if you do have non-exempt assets that you don't want to lose in the bankruptcy, sometimes Chapter 13 can be preferable. Sometimes people are not eligible for Chapter 7 because they make too much money. And sometimes people have already gotten a Chapter 7 discharge in the recent past and therefore could not get another discharge in Chapter 7. Some debts are not dischargeable in Chapter 7 and you have to do a 13 to discharge them.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. What kinds of people usually file for bankruptcy? Are there wealthy people, people who are struggling financially, middle class people? Can you tell us who usually files for bankruptcy?
Well, I don't know that there's a general, you know, class of common debtor. I mean, the thing that people who file bankruptcy have in common or should have in common is that they have debt. Bankruptcy is a really good solution for debt problems, but it doesn't really help with other kinds of problems. And so a lot of people I hear say, oh, I'm broke, I need to file bankruptcy. Well, you know, if you have debt, bankruptcy will help get rid of your debt. But if your problem is that you're broke, I mean, it doesn't really do anything for income problems. And so the solution to that might be getting a job or getting a better job or cutting your expenses. But the common factor is debt. And, you know, people who have a whole ton of debt generally benefit better from a bankruptcy than people who have less debt. But it's, you know, it's all kind of relative as far as what people might envision being able to pay off in their life. So it really, debt is the common factor, I would say.
That makes sense. So people who, for example, would have large amounts of medical debt or credit card debt or personal loans, and for some unforeseen reason, they lose their job and maybe have problems making car payments. Those are the kind of people that would probably benefit most from filing for bankruptcy. Is that correct?
Sure. All the debt that you mentioned is the kind of debt that's dischargeable. One that you did not mention is business debt. And so a lot of times people who have a failed business in which they have guaranteed, say, a commercial lease or something like that personally, a lot of times those are also people who benefit immensely from bankruptcy. But yeah, if you have medical debt, it's dischargeable. Credit card debt is dischargeable. Some taxes are dischargeable if they're older than 3 years. Personal loans, those nasty payday loans that have horrible interest rates, a lot of that's dischargeable. Even judgments against you, depending on what the judgment was for, if it didn't have something to do with fraud or willful and malicious injury, if it was just a breach of contract type of thing, or even a negligent tort judgment, those can also be discharged in bankruptcy.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. Where does someone who wants to file for bankruptcy, where should they begin their process?
They should begin their process by talking to someone who knows what they're doing. Bankruptcy, like I said, is a really good solution for debt problems, but there are certain risks involved with bankruptcy, especially if you own any kind of property, particularly real estate is one that can be very tricky. That's usually if people have assets, your house is usually your most valuable asset. And it's also where you live and you don't want to lose it. And so you have to be real careful that, if you're filing bankruptcy and you own a house, that there's not going to be issues that arise once you file. A lot of people are under the impression that if you file bankruptcy, you lose all your stuff. And that's a false impression because of something called exemption laws. So every state has determined that there's a certain amount of property that a person needs to live with dignity, like clothes and a way to get around and furniture. And each state has a different list of stuff that you're allowed to keep up to a certain value. And so in Colorado, you have a $2,000 clothing exemption. Most people's clothes are not worth $2,000 at a garage sale. So you can keep your clothes. Now, if you had a closet full of fur coats worth $10,000, that would be above the exemption limit. And the trustee who is appointed to administer your case might ask you to turn over those coats, though, so that he could auction them off and use the money to pay your creditors.
Well, thank you for sharing that. So we're going to move over to our next talking point. What are some things our listeners should watch out for? For example, I know that courts in the U.S. Trustee's office has discussed bifurcated fee agreements and how indigent petitioners can often find themselves in such situations.
I guess from a practitioner's standpoint, it's very important to be well informed of how a bankruptcy practice is regulated by the bankruptcy code and by the local rules of the jurisdiction in which you practice. One of the things that's kind of different about bankruptcy, and from a practitioner's and a debtor's perspective can be problematic, is that there's no real way to do a, get your services now, pay later type of arrangement. Some attorneys get paid by contingency, right? Sometimes you can, put down a retainer with an attorney and say, look, when this runs out, just start billing me. If you're representing a debtor who you are about to file a bankruptcy for, once that bankruptcy is filed, the debtor's debt is, all of its pre-petition debt is wiped out. And that includes any money that it owes to the attorney. So the basic payment model for a Chapter 7 debtor to their attorney has been you pay the money up front. Now, in Colorado, which is where I practice and where I know the most about, Chapter 7 bankruptcy usually costs between $1,500 and $2,000. Then on top of that, there's a $338 $1 filing fee that you pay with the court. And there are some debtors who just simply can't afford to pay that upfront to an attorney in one lump sum, or think that they can't. Now, what a bifurcated fee agreement supposedly does is to split the attorney's job into two pieces and basically have the debtor pay a very nominal fee or nothing for pre-petition work and then enter into a post-petition agreement with the attorney to do all the rest of the work. And this is kind of it's a problem because it doesn't really match up this idea with the practicalities of how a bankruptcy works.
Right.
I mean, generally, if you do a bankruptcy right, you do all of the work up front before you file because you have to gather a lot of information and make sure that the debtor should be filing bankruptcy. A lot of the pro se bankruptcy clients that I see at my clinic, they come to me and my number one advice to them is, well, don't just file a bare bones petition and think that you're going to do everything else later and open a case because you're going to get a deficiency notice from the court saying that, you know, this, you know, 60 other pages of paperwork is going to be due in 2 weeks' time.
Sure.
And so I say, whatever you do, don't do that. Well, the bifurcated fee agreement, you know, that is the whole idea, except there's an attorney doing it. You know, I really think that even if they did cram all of the rest of the work into the 2 weeks between filing and the deadline after the deficiency notice is entered, that they're not probably doing their best work. Now, another problem that comes in with bifurcated fee agreements is that the bankruptcy code has a list of basic services that a bankruptcy attorney is supposed to provide to their client. I mean, they're required by law to provide these services to the client. And so if you tell a client, look, I can do this, I can file this tiny part of your petition, but I'm not going to do anything else for you unless you enter into a post-petition fee agreement, that's misleading because you're required to provide those services.
So yes, what I'm saying is that people often, some attorneys are taking advantage of that. They know that they're required to do certain tasks and yet they're misleading certain clients. Wow.
They're not disclosing their duties to the client. Wow. And, you know, I don't know how successful these fee agreements have been. I mean, I suppose that there is some way that you could draft something that might pass muster if the U.S. trustee took a hard look at it and a judge was given the task of determining whether you had violated the bankruptcy code. But it would be a real trick of careful drafting. And, you know, I think it might be even in the attorney's interest just to, you know, have an informal agreement, you know, with the debtor, if that's what they wanted to do, and say, look, you're under no obligation to pay me any money after this petition is filed. But, you know, come on, you could do it if you wanted to. So let's do a handshake agreement and please pay me. And then if they don't, you know, you don't get paid. But a lot of this, I think, sort of misses an important point, is that if you truly have no money and no income, there's not a whole lot that creditors can do to you. I mean, a creditor's remedy is to get a judgment. And then once they get a judgment, they can use that to garnish your wages or get a lien on your house or some other property or your bank account. But if you don't have a job and you don't have any property and you don't have any money in your bank account, there's not much that creditors can do. And so the question is, really, is a bankruptcy even necessary? Or would it do more harm than good? I always tell indigent clients that the time to file bankruptcy is when you've hit rock bottom, but you're on your way back up. Right. You've gotten that job. You know, you get your first couple paychecks, they're covering your expenses, and then bam, you get hit with a garnishment. Okay, well, that's a good reason to file bankruptcy. right? But you can only file bankruptcy once every 8 years. And so if you don't have any prospects, if you're just going to fall directly back into debt after you get your old debt discharged, there's no reason to file. Just tell your creditors, I'm terribly sorry, I don't have any money.
Sure, right? Sure.
They'll call, they'll bother you. They'll say, oh, Mr. So-and-so, this is a very serious matter. And then you just say, well, what are you going to do about it? And eventually they'll go away because they don't, you know, they've got other, you know, if you're broke, you're broke. And, you know, what are they going to bang their head against the wall for?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that. Just to remind our listeners, we are currently in talks with Matthew Skeen, Jr., managing attorney of the Pro Se Clinic at the U.S. District Court of Colorado, a program run by the Colorado Bar Association, which has offered bankruptcy services to people with their Chapter 7 bankruptcy cases. The clinic has given limited scope legal advice by phone or video appointment to individuals who don't have attorneys. Finally, the clinic counsels on eligibility for bankruptcy protection, drafting petitions, schedules and responses, court procedures, orders, rules and forms, and preparation for meetings of the creditors. Matt, thank you for really sharing what bankruptcy attorneys do and how petitioners should watch out for bifurcated fee agreements. Can you share with us what can bankruptcy attorneys do to protect themselves and also still help or provide services to indigent petitioners who need access to bankruptcy?
Well, I mean, part of what I was saying is that a lot of times indigent people don't need bankruptcy. And I think that a good practitioner is going to, you know, not just try to land another client who doesn't need their services. Judge McNamara in the Colorado District wrote a very good opinion where he examined a bifurcated fee agreement. And the debtor in that case, she had a bunch of student loans, like $46,000 in student loans or something like that, that were non-dischargeable. She had like maybe $5,000 of other credit card debt. Okay. So this attorney talked her into a bifurcated fee agreement whereby she would pay him, you know, $2,900 or something like that over 2 years. Okay. And that's to get $5,000 of debt discharged.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, the net benefit to that creditor, I mean, she probably could have negotiated that down to, you know, $2,000 with the credit card company. So, you know, the question is, why did they tell that lady to file? And, you know, maybe it was to get the fees. So, you know, I think as a bankruptcy practitioner, you have to be ethical.
Absolutely.
And you have to do what's in the best interests of your client. And a lot of times for indigent people, bankruptcy is not in their best interest. A lot of times people call and they've got a lot of other problems. I mean, people call the clinic and, you know, they're homeless. And I tell those people, look, you don't need to worry about debt right now, you know, because you don't have anything that anyone can take from you. What you need to do is access other services like mental health and housing and food stamps, okay, and go to the county and get help. And, you know, you don't have to worry about your credit card company right now. They'll do just fine, okay?
Sure.
You need to worry about getting a roof over your head where you can nourish yourself, okay? So a lot of people, they've got bigger problems. And I think that that's what bankruptcy lawyers can do. I mean, as opposed to trying to figure out some sneaky way to get past the code so that they can, you know, bill these people for 2 years. I just don't, you know, do it for free, you know, and start representing people who, I mean, a lot of times people think they can't pay your bill and you say, look, how much are you paying your credit card companies, right? Oh, you know, it's terrible. $600 a month, right? Okay, well, stop paying them, okay? And start paying me $600 a month instead of your creditors, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, 3 months later, we're ready to file.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing that. Can you tell us maybe how the Colorado Bar Association came up with the idea for a program to help Colorado residents filing for bankruptcy, and approximately how many people has a clinic helped to date?
So the Pro Se Bankruptcy Clinic is the bankruptcy component of the larger federal Pro Se Clinic. The federal Pro Se Clinic was invented first, and it was thought up by the district court because they had a lot of people without attorneys trying to navigate and litigate federal court unsuccessfully. And, you know, cluttering the docket and pestering the clerks with questions that they were unable to answer because they were not lawyers, and, you know, immediately getting motions to dismiss that they didn't know how to respond to. And so the district court thought it would be good if there was a place where those people could get their questions answered, you know, that was something less than full pro bono representation. And so they came up with this idea of a limited scope clinic where people could come and get counsel and advice on their case. And this clinic would be funded out of a fee paid by all federal practitioners every 2 years of about $50. Well, the bankruptcy bar is often kind of the forgotten stepchild of the federal bar, right? Everyone forgets that bankruptcy lawyers are practice in federal court because we have our own special bankruptcy courts, but they're federal courts. And so the bankruptcy lawyers were paying this fee as well. But, you know, the bankruptcy court, it wasn't really helping bankrupt people, you know, unless they had some appeal in federal district court. And so the bankruptcy judges said, well, hey, don't forget about us. And so they created a bankruptcy component. They started that 3 years ago. And, you know, when it started, they just, I don't think that they really knew what it was going to be, but they hired me. And, you know, it's different from what the people do in federal court. I mean, federal court is litigating lawsuits, and bankruptcy court has real, I mean, the bankruptcy clinic has really been able to kind of fill this niche for people who need to talk to someone about bankruptcy, but they don't think they have enough money for an attorney, and they, you know, they don't trust what they read on the internet, and they don't want to go to pay a petition preparer. You know, there's just no real reliable source for legal advice that people can access without paying. And so this fills that niche as a place where you can go with questions about bankruptcy and get some information that you can rely on.
Absolutely. If another bar association or court across the country wanted to set up a similar program in their jurisdiction, what advice would you give them?
Well, I mean, I think it would be fairly straightforward to replicate. I mean, you'd have to figure out where the funding was from. One advice that I might give to the local bar association is that you really need to have good communication with the members of your bar. When the bankruptcy clinic in Colorado was started, there was a lot of kind of concern among the other debtors' attorneys in the bar association saying, well, why are we creating this clinic that could, you know, where people can just get free advice instead of coming to us? You know, isn't the bar association, isn't the idea of a nonprofit professional association, aren't we the constituents of that? And, you know, I think that just having that discussion is important to say, look, you know, most of these people don't even need to file bankruptcy, and that's what they need to hear, right? Sure. And if you want to take an hour out of your day to tell them that they don't need to file bankruptcy with you and pay your fee, you know, you can do that. But maybe it would be nice if they had another place to go to get that information, you know. And a lot of times when I talk to people with serious, complicated bankruptcy issues, my advice is you need to talk to an attorney. You need to hire a full service attorney if you're going to do that. Otherwise, things may not turn out well. You know, a simple, straightforward bankruptcy can be done by a non-lawyer. But if it gets messy, and if a trustee files an adversary proceeding, and suddenly there's a complaint that you have to answer, and it goes into discovery, and I mean, that is not something that an individual without legal training is going to be prepared to deal with. So, you know, I help a lot of people, but I don't feel like I am, you know, stealing clients from debtors' attorneys by any means.
Our listeners would love to hear, in your own words, the path that your career has taken, how you ended up in bankruptcy, and what advice might you give law students interested in bankruptcy law?
Well, my path was very atypical. I was born into it. My father was a bankruptcy litigator. My mother was a Chapter 7 trustee. Both me and my brother ended up working for the family practice. So, you know, it took me, I had to graduate from law school before I really understood dinner table conversations. I realized that that's not the typical path. Before I was a bankruptcy lawyer, I resisted for a while. I taught English for many years. And then finally, when my brother started working with my father, they looked like they were having so much fun that I decided I wanted to join up too. And so, you know, when I went to law school, I knew that I was going to do bankruptcy. And so I took bankruptcy in law school. I took secured transactions, which is a good class to take. I took a debtors, remedies, creditors, rights class, which was helpful. Bankruptcy, a lot of times, can turn into sort of a general practice. A lot of other legal issues come into play when you're dealing with bankruptcy, such as divorce and family law or probate or real estate. So advice to law students is, I would say don't be scared of bankruptcy. One of the things that bankruptcy lawyers, they kind of create the impression amongst, you know, the bar, that bankruptcy is really its own thing and super complicated. And you really don't, if a bankruptcy question comes up, just forget about it. Find a bankruptcy attorney. They're the only ones who know this, like, mystic knowledge, right? And it's not really like that. I mean, it can be complicated, but I would say it's nothing to be afraid of. And it's kind of a fun practice. I mean, it's a pretty small bar, so you kind of know everybody, you know all the people, and you get to make good relationships, and you have your own judges, and things get in and out of court really quickly. Sometimes things go smoothly, and sometimes things get really contentious. And so if you're the type of lawyer who's looking for competition and litigation, that's certainly a path that you can find in bankruptcy. And then, you know, on the other side, if you mostly focus on just helping debtors get debt relief, you know, a lot of times it's almost more of a kind of a transactional practice, you know, in a sense that you're just kind of helping people apply for this relief that's offered. And in any event, I would say it's a feel-good practice. A lot of people, they kind of think of the creditor as the bad guy, but a lot of times you have really sympathetic creditors. You know, you've got a guy whose company filed bankruptcy and he's owed 3 months of wages that he hasn't been paid, that he needs to pay his mortgage, you know, or, you know, people who got scammed by somebody and lent them a bunch of money under false pretenses, who now the guy's trying to discharge it. So I would say it's a rich practice. There's a lot of angles. It's complex. It's intellectually challenging. And I enjoy it.
Today's guest is Matthew Skeen Jr. He is a managing attorney of the Pro Se Clinic at the U.S. District Court of Colorado, a program run by the Colorado Bar Association. Thank you, Matt, for joining us today on today's episode of Let's Brief It and sharing your thoughts and insights about bankruptcy, bifurcated fee agreements, and indigent debtors. To our audience in the D.C. region and elsewhere, thank you for listening.
Thanks, Jijana. It's been a pleasure.
The D.C. Bar Law Student Community strives to engage and support law students before you graduate and expose you to the tangible benefits of joining the D.C. Bar and D.C. Bar communities. Curated programming allows law students to participate in leadership trainings, substantive content programming, networking with practicing attorneys in fields of interest, writing opportunities, and other activities designed to expand your legal education beyond the classroom. Make an investment in your legal career by joining the Law Student Community. To learn more, visit us at www.dcbar.org or email communities@dcbar.org.